when people are asking like how to get more subscribers and users, like our MO has always just been produce consistent quality content. And that's something that we did when we were running the website, and that worked for us then. I think the typical YouTube content creator has to do something more than that. I think it's evolved, much more complicated than just producing quality, consistent content, especially with the amount of people out there. I think we really have to do something to kind of step it up. And also, again, I think there is a good amount of luck involved with some of it. Just kind of doing something different, but also something that people want is really like, is something that I think is what we're approaching this with, is finding out the things that people don't get, doing it with some care and quality, and just trying to be a little bit different.
Welcome back to the Make or Break Show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and the make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm your host, Brandon Cullum, and this week we chat with Joey Famelli, the senior video producer over at Tested. We get into his workflows, gear, and philosophy to capturing everything from One Day Build with Adam Savage to expeditions to the Arctic with astronaut Chris Hadfield. All right, what's up, guys? Welcome back to the Make or Break Show. We've got a really fun one for you guys. This one's cool, especially if you guys are getting into video production or kind of thinking about how to document your own builds, or if you're just a big fan of Tested and Adam Savage, and all the great things the guys over there are doing. But before we get into our show, as always, I want to let you guys know that this is brought to you by the wonderful supporters over on Patreon. And if you guys would like to be a supporter, you can head over to patreon.com/makeorbreakshow. We got a bunch of different levels, a bunch of different things you guys can get. And so if you guys already support the show, thank you so much. And if you guys would like to support the show, be sure and check it out. All right, so jumping into this week's episode, if you guys aren't familiar with Tested, definitely go and check it out, tested.com. Or over on YouTube, they have an incredible channel with all kinds of builds. Probably was made most famous by the one and only Adam Savage from Mythbusters fame. You see a lot of builds inside of his cave in San Francisco, but they do just a lot of cool stuff from nerd culture to making to building. It's just incredible. And what was fun is as I was starting to watch the channel, there'd be a few videos. There was more behind the scenes, kind of thinking through how do we record a podcast? How do we film these one day builds? What's that look like? And it was with Joey Famelli, who is the guest on this week's episode. He is now the senior video producer over at Tested. And so he's been around with them for a really long time. And this episode's fun because we don't get into making as much, but we get more into how do you document what you're making. So we get into the gear that he uses, some of the stuff he recommends, as well as how he thinks through his shots, and kind of how he approaches documenting what they're doing. So Joey is a blast. He is a video guy through and through. He's got some for real experience over in Hollywood. And so he's doing some amazing stuff. But without further ado, let's jump into our interview with Joey. All right, guys, I want to welcome you back to the Make or Break Show. We're hanging out with video producer, film maker extraordinaire, Joey, calling in from LA to make it super official. Thank you so much for jumping on and chatting with us. Looking forward to getting into your background and all the stuff you're doing with Tested, as well as just the stuff you're creating.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Well, I'd love to kind of go through your background and get into how you got to where you are before really getting deep into some of the gear and some of the ways that you guys shoot. But growing up, were you like the AV kid in high school? No. Is that the stereotype? Do I have that right at all?
Not really. I was always really into like visual storytelling. As far as elementary school, I was basically like the guy kind of making, picture books, I was doing a lot of flip books.
Okay.
Just like taking post-it cards and flipping through it. I was really into comic books. So like that medium was something that it was held real dear to my heart. And I was like, that was a career I was kind of thinking I was going to be going into. I drew a lot of like, what eventually would become storyboards, but like just panels and panels of action.
Yeah.
And I pursued that quite a bit. I did a lot of, I just buy up all the different art supplies and did a lot of submissions to like Marvel at the time. This is before, the movies.
Right, right.
Like we had like the original Punisher movie, and if you remember those, Captain
America. Yeah, yeah.
But the film market wasn't there. And I was really into just comics. And it wasn't until a little bit later, I kind of went off to, I finished high school. I kind of peeled back from comics a bit, and I was just in this state of like not really knowing what I was going to do. But I, like looking back, it kind of makes sense. Like I drew so much. I played with my parents' like video cameras, and like would edit on VHS tapes. And I didn't really connect that to a career. I lived in the Northern California, just north of San Francisco, and we, you know, we had our local film legacies there, the ILM, the graffiti, you know, all of Lucas's stuff. But the film industry wasn't something that was really tangible to me, or like filmmaking in general. And so, you know, I did school abroad in Florence, Italy, and I kind of just spent a lot of time just studying art and art history. And when I came back, it was kind of this weird aha moment of like, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing with my life here? And I just kind of looked back at what I'd done. And at that time, prosumer gear was just coming out. This is like early 2000s. And so, I was thinking about film school, but at that time, there were so many affordable cameras coming out. There was editing systems like iMovie was just being released, and Final Cut was still kind of new. And I kind of toured around film schools who were all still very much working in film and like reel to reel, or you know, using film. And I was trying to figure out how to pursue this thing, and I decided just to take a little bit of a loan out and just spend my money on my own gear. And just shoot a bunch with like friends, and just kind of have that be my film school. So I shot a bunch of short films, shot a bunch of just little pieces here and there, and finished college. I went to college for finance.
Oh, really? Kind of just, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I think all my friends and family were like, why don't you go to school for film? I'm like, well, I could just like, I spent all of my time studying film, studying the technical aspects as well as the storytelling. And I almost felt like film school was going to slow me down a bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I thought I'll just pursue get my credits and like finance, have that be a kind of a backup. And I just spent all of my free hours hanging out in the film department in my college.
Yeah.
And so I became really good friends with those guys. And those guys are more of the AV guys. And I was just the kind of interloper just coming in, playing with all the gear. And eventually ended up becoming close with them and doing a lot of film projects, which I still do to this day. And it's like 10 years later, and I'm still kind of working with some of those guys.
What type of projects were you guys working on back then?
It was mostly like film competition. So at that point, I think it's still around, the Campus Movie Festival. That's a film festival that goes to different colleges. And so we would basically just make short films throughout the year, and then we would all compete in the film festival once a year, or once a semester rather. And so it was very much us imitating who we liked at the time. Like, my stuff was all very David Fincher, Quentin Tarantino angled, while my friends were kind of really getting into CG. You know, again, at this point, all of these tools were just becoming accessible.
Yeah.
So like, you can model something in 3D and throw it into Final Cut. And my friend was like, just all night, you know, learning how to do, you know, blood squibs without actually having practical squibs and all that stuff. So it was a real fun time of just getting our hands on all this new gear and then just applying it to what we loved and knew. And so I did that for, you know, through college. And again, there wasn't much of an industry where I was at. So I was trying to figure out what to do, where to go. But as I started kind of researching more on jobs that would fall in line with you know, what I love doing, I started finding other avenues. And this was, I guess, I don't think YouTube was quite a thing, but like internet video was just coming out as kind of a result of the prosumer gear becoming more affordable. Now you have like internet video. So I wrote a lengthy email. I don't know if you know the guys over at Rooster Teeth. Are you familiar with that company?
Yeah.
So I wrote them a big letter. I'm just like, how like basically just picking their brain. Like, how do you guys start this? How did you, like, at what point did you figure out that internet video was a thing that, you know, you guys can do for a living? And I got a big response back from like Bernie, the guy who kind of runs it, talking about his past and computer science. And it just kind of motivated me to like really pursue this other avenue as a way of getting into the film industry. And so I reached, it was all kind of there's a whole list of things that happened all at once. That was a lot of luck, which was a friend was starting a new website. He used to work at CBSI. He was starting a new video game website with a bunch of his old coworkers, and they were being funded by a company called Whiskey Media, and they were looking for more video producers, for more content creators. And at that time, they were just kind of looking for folks to come in for a couple months and see how things went. And I got in there, had an interview with one of the guys who ended up being my boss for years. And from there, just kind of just jumped right into doing internet videos for a living, which eventually tested the company I work for now, was part of that Whiskey Media family. And I kind of started at the same time that they joined in and did all their launch videos. And then from there, we, business stuff happened and companies moved around, and we ended up being paired up with Adam Savage. And that's kind of where I'm at now. I'm missing a little bit of stuff. I did some freelance work here and there right after college, but it wasn't until Whiskey Media where I really had this thing going on full time.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
When you joined up with Tested, Will and Norm had been going for a little bit. Is that right? Before that point?
Will and Norm were, I think they were each working, Tested wasn't a thing yet at Whiskey. Okay. It became a thing at Whiskey. So I think they each were, I can't remember what company, what publications they worked for, but there was like Maximum PC or PC Gamer.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So they came from there and they kind of joined forces, in the infancy of Whiskey Media. So they came on, probably about 2 months after I started. I was kind of working on the video game site, the comic book site, and the movie site, and then they came on as the tech site. At that time, they were very tech focused. It was all kind of technology reviews that were a little more entertaining than your kind of cookie cutter CNET videos that were happening at that time.
Yeah, yeah. I love to do like a reverse search on the videos by date. The first one's like electronics and condoms. And so, yeah, the definitely a different focus than your normal CNET videos. That's funny. Once you got with them, I mean, have you pretty much been in the more or less the day-to-day operations on the video side of the production side of things?
Yeah. So after about 2 years at Whiskey, I mean, I was predominantly, there was a small company, about 30 of us, but I was mostly with the movie website.
Okay.
Which was actually like a really cool learning experience that I didn't learn to appreciate until much later. It was, we had an editor I worked with who would, kind of do what I guess you would know as like video essays now. Back then they weren't really a thing. So we were kind of figuring that out, figuring out how to do a video essay based off of movies and stuff. And again, we weren't using YouTube. It was our own player. So we didn't have to worry about copyright claims or any of that stuff. So, he would write these scripts and produce these like, 5-7 minute stand-up pieces. And then I would go through the movies that he would be talking about and kind of pick out clips. And that kind of taught me a lot about editing narratively, just by being able to go frame by frame through something and kind of see how they cut it, how they shot it. What kind of color contrast worked from scene to scene, like things like that, that I was just kind of taken in by osmosis that I didn't really realize until later on editing my own narrative stuff. I'm like, oh yeah, like this is all like, that was kind of a weird film school in itself. And that's something that I often recommend to people who are just starting out learning editing, was like, cut your own trailer, like take someone else's trailer. You see a lot of these like horror movies that are cut into comedies.
Yeah.
And stuff like that kind of teaches you just how an edit works for comedic timing or vice versa for like horror. But I was doing that for about 2 years, and I was helping out Tested, and I was helping out the video game site here and there on events. Like I'd go to see the CES every year and just kind of help those guys out. So I was kind of doing a little bit of everything. So I learned kind of all those editorial people were doing. And then when we became part of the company we're with now and teamed up with Adam and Jamie, that's when I became a little bit more part of the day to day.
Okay.
And I don't know if you were kind of following our site then, we produced a lot of video content. So it was a lot of, there would be days where we come into the set and just gang shoot 5 or 6 reviews. And then I just spend the week editing them. And then at that point we started getting into like travel and meeting makers across the world and doing stuff like that, which became probably something that I love the most about that job.
Yeah. So when you were doing those gang shoots or you guys were shooting a ton, I feel like I might've been reading an interview you did, but a lot of the stuff back then, or maybe still now, you guys were doing pretty much live to tape. Was that right?
Yeah, we did a lot of live to tape for some of our longer form stuff. Live to tape was something that we did a lot at Whiskey Media. Because we had all these different brands, we had produced these like live shows. So we had different sets and we had our live to tape mixer that would often go live out to our streaming sites. I think at that time it was like Justin TV or Ustream, and then became Twitch. But it just became a way to keep up with that amount of content while also, you know, having some degree of quality over the editing and the graphics and all that stuff. And eventually ended up learning how to use it. We use it with like three people, one person working on audio and graphics, one person doing like telephone calls, one person doing the mixing. And I kind of designed it once we got into tested to just be able to produce live to tape segments as like a one man band, in the back while the guys were using the set. And that stuff has all come a long way. At that time we were using like $100,000 equipment, by Neutek and TriCaster, but that stuff's all, it's pretty inexpensive now as long as you got the right, you know, cameras that can work with that stuff well.
What are you guys using now?
Right now, we don't do a whole lot of live to tape stuff. We still actually use that TriCaster, and we still use it for a lot of builds that require like hours and hours of tape, basically. Instead of having four or five cameras all recording locally and then having someone dedicate their time multi-cam mixing that in post-production, we can just have all those cameras streaming out through SDI or HDMI to the TriCaster and then have them all mixed down into one file. So you're saving a lot of space, a lot of storage space, but also a lot of just man hours. You can just have one person dedicated to that. And then we, as far as like reviews and on location stuff, we do all camera, in camera for that.
Okay.
So yeah, anything that's like, I want to say 2 hours or more of building, we'll use the TriCaster to make that, make our life easier.
That makes sense. So I've talked to some folks, especially on the video side of things, where for the film side, where maybe they have more of the traditional movie, TV background, and then they get in kind of the maker world. And that feels like it's a lot more run and gun and like almost documentary style. Like you don't have 6 hours to set up like a shot of like cutting something. Like, was that something you had to like go through, or since you kind of had come through the path that you did, it was kind of natural in that workflow?
It was actually tough for me. That was a tough transition, was to figure out what my style was, what my voice was in this. When I started doing this, I was really into narrative. I was really into like spending time figuring out shots, storyboarding, and it was still running on filmmaking. But I spent enough time with like pre-pro, at least in my head, to like come there with a battle plan. And execute something. And then especially when we got involved with like Adam and Jamie, like they're, you know, they shot a television show that is very documentary style, and I became good friends with the crew, so I've been able to pick their brains quite a bit. But they're, you know, they're shooting like 5-6 hours of footage and then kind of cutting that, and that's not something that I was used to at all, was that run and gun style. So I feel like I still somewhat approach our builds with a filmic sensibility. Like I'm still looking to do cinematic things with what I'm doing when I'm shooting and editing builds. But I'm also trying to keep that part of me in check and allow myself to open up a little bit to just roll in, like you said, documentary style. Like adopting a documentary style approach to those things was something that it took a while for me to do. But once I did eventually kind of dive into it, I became to appreciate a lot more and started doing a lot more research on what it is to film things in that style, in that documentary style, both from like a storytelling standpoint, but also from a technical aspect. I feel like I got a kind of a good balance now, but again, it's still something I am constantly in this. I have to remind myself to let go of some of the more precious things about filming and kind of let the subject kind of inform me of how to shoot and how to edit.
So a lot of the folks that are listening, they probably have their own YouTube channel. And so a lot of their videos are going to be the maker style videos. And probably the granddaddy of them all are the one day builds. And so when you're filming those, is there like a narrative that you're going into? Like, do you know these are certain shots, or are you just kind of flying with whatever Adam's doing and kind of fixing it in the edit, or what's that kind of the process look like?
It's a little bit of both. We've been doing the one day builds probably since we got picked up at, you know, 2012. So we've been doing about 5-6 years now, and they've evolved and kind of became what they are now, maybe only a couple years ago. And again, that was something that we were just trying to figure out. Like, what is this video? Are these videos tutorials? Are they how to's? Are they like, you know, Bob Ross kind of like, like just like kind of I guess, chill out kind of videos, is something that's a little more atmospheric.
Yeah.
And it eventually it became kind of an amalgamation of all those, but like a typical day of a one day build, right? I'll show up, Adam, you know, I got this Nerf gun. I want to mod. And then, okay. And like the opposite end of the spectrum is, oh, I have this like shelf I want to build. Like these are like two very typical one day build kind of things. And so the Nerf gun mod, I look at as like, okay, well, like this is really going to be focusing more on not only like the visual surprises and flourishes, but also like this is not something that he normally does. So like maybe there'll be a little more mistakes. So I'll try to like, as I'm shooting, I'll try to build in a narrative in my head where it's like, okay, like I'm going to document two or three of these mistakes. And then, you know, as these mistakes keep happening or as he's figuring things out, I kind of speed up the edit and I'll know that like I can really, you know, duck down the music and then make a success hit. So I'll kind of work on like milestones and successes with those videos and then contrast that with like, you know, dramatic, like things not working out, as a way to kind of keep this ebb and flow of a video interesting. And then just like spending moments of like montage filmmaking and doing a lot of cinematic shots. So like in my head, I'm putting the structure out as I'm going in there. And then obviously that's changing quite a bit and I'm adapting to that. And that really I'm only able to do that with experience now. I think when I was doing it at the time, I was just kind of fly on the wall. Like, what am I doing? I'm just going to shoot this thing, shoot that thing, and then figure it out in the edit. But now I have a much more sense of his, just his like cadence in the shop of how his attitude is, you know, finding like the big burst of emotion and contrasting that with like super, you know, super focused building and kind of playing with each of those, not hanging on each of those emotions too long. And then stuff like a shelving unit or something where I know he's going to bring, yeah, he's going to bring something unique to it, but he's also going to like have a lot of tips and like a lot of very practical tips that have to do with things that maybe a lot of us as, you know, woodworkers or builders might take. So like I'll find those moments and kind of engage him, you know, and ask him what he's doing, what kind of, you know, how can you improve this or what would you have done? What are some alternative ways you could have done these? And then have him address the camera and the audience that way and kind of give something a little more informative so that someone can walk away kind of replicating this. But I don't expect someone to replicate a giant, you know, modding a Nerf gun to be a 1,000 shooter
like, yeah.
thing. But I, you know, just kind of addressing the project, figuring out what the audience really wants from this and then what I kind of want to give them and how I want to approach the feel of the video. And that's it. Again, that's something that it's hard to articulate just because I've been doing it for so long that I kind of feel it out. So usually the first half of the day is very much me feeling it out, me working with him. And then it just turns into kind of a dance between us two in the shop and as far as the rest of the shooting day goes.
Yeah. I was actually about to say that it kind of feels like a dance partner.
I'm
just getting used to it.
And like a dance partner, like at the beginning, first couple of years, we were stumbling all over the place, like figuring out like, where are you going? Like now I almost know exactly what tools, how he approaches every tool, every station in his workshop. Like I know his path, his like preferred pathway or his preferred way to go into something. So as he's like, okay, now I need to go bandsaw this. And as he's getting over to the bandsaw, I know exactly where my best angle is, where like I can stay out of his way so that he can kind of move freely.
It would be fun to see you guys switch roles because I feel like you've got enough watching the building that you could do it. And then he's definitely have enough on the film side that he could just get behind the camera. So that'd be funny.
Yeah. I've worked with him a little bit behind the camera together as we've been shooting stuff.
Oh, cool.
Like, and it's been I forget how much kind of coming from a background of film he has and how much of an eye, especially like on the moment, just he'd be able to like throw out ideas and be able to just give advice on certain things. I'm like, oh wow. Yeah. You have a lot of experience on this side as well of this side. And then vice versa. Like you said, like, I think just being around all this stuff, I don't really realize it again, but like by osmosis, I'll all of a sudden go to a garage. Like, oh, I can build this thing. I didn't even know I could.
Yeah. I was watching your overhead rig. I guess last year. And I was like, ah, sweet, he's using tools. Like this is fun. So there's the saw. That's cool. So what's it like producing content for YouTube? But you've been in the traditional world too. Like, is that strange? Or like you mentioned the Nerf. I mean, that's what, over 8 million views. Like you made a video, like a video that probably TV shows don't get sometimes. Like, what's that like?
It's weird. And I think because we've always had the support team, from our parent company, and because Norman Will kind of came from a publication background, as a video producer, I've always been kind of one step removed from that stuff. Just kind of, I've been able to step back and just work on content and not think about it. But now it's becoming more of an interest to me as I'm working on like other projects and other channels and stuff in my spare time. I am paying a little more attention to YouTube, and it's a whole different world. It's a whole different world of analytics and algorithms. I mean, that we just had a big conversation about the Nerf video. You know, our typical videos are like, you know, 50K or something. And then like an add on one day build might hit a million. So this like 8 million has everyone kind of scratching their heads and trying to figure out like, what did we do right?
Yeah.
And to some degree, you're just like, well, like we just hit the algorithm jackpot.
Right.
And there was something in YouTube that put us on everyone's radar who were going on there. And also like, we didn't know about this whole Nerf mod community that kind of jumped up and checked all this stuff out. But it's something that I still don't have a firm grasp on.
Okay.
Like when people are asking like how to get more subscribers and users, like our MO has always just been produce consistent quality content. And that's something that we did when we were running the website, and that worked for us then. But I think the YouTube, I think the typical YouTube content creator has to do something more than that. I think it's evolved to something much more complicated than just producing quality, consistent content, especially with the amount of people and the amount of creators out there. I think you really have to do something to kind of step it up. And also, again, I think there is a good amount of luck involved with some of it, but just kind of doing something different, but also something that people want is really like, is something that I think is what we're approaching this with, is finding out the things that people don't get, doing it with some care and quality and just trying to be a little bit different.
Yeah. Do you approach like the nuts and the bolts of the actual edit differently, knowing that it's going to live in that form factor?
Yeah, we do. It's something we've been practicing lately. And we've been approaching other platforms as well, like Twitter, Instagram stories. All of these places have different kind of like a different style that succeeds best there. Like, so if I'm going through, the way I approach it now is I kind of go through a full edit and I kind of cut it how I think it should be cut. And then I have to kind of put on different eyeballs. And then also we have the support team. We have people around who can help be those eyeballs. But like then going through and being like, what would work on like a Twitter video? What would work on an Instagram video? And then trying to pull that stuff out. So while we try on set on the day of to identify certain areas, okay, like, you know what, that thing over there, let's like stop what we're doing for a minute and like let's do this, you know, Facebook video. We try our best to do that. We're probably not the greatest at that when it comes to figuring that stuff out. We very much do it in post-production, but I think we're all trying to get better at that. And again, yeah, it's something that a lot of us just haven't thought about. So our brains aren't wired that way, but I think some of the YouTube creators that are just working solo, I think they have a much better, mindset to go into those things, which is impressive.
Yeah. 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 So talking a little more on the equipment side of things, you mentioned that it sounds like a lot more of your work is when you guys are traveling. So, and more the documentary style. So were you, did you film like the Make Your Tour, the tour ones?
I filmed a couple. Okay. Yeah. So, those were produced slightly out of house in terms of like, it wasn't a typical production for us. I showed up on a couple cities here and there, and it's much more of not an outreach, but like we're trying to draw more attention to these places that are offering people in other cities and people who don't might not know that there are these maker communities around, and kind of bring light to that. Those are shot in what I would call much more of like a run and gun okay. kind of filmmaking approach. I show up with all the gear. All right, what are we doing? Where are we shooting? And then like we're gonna go through these maker spaces, and the producers they are kind of dictate and guide that process along. And I'm just there as really again like a fly on the wall, just shooting all that stuff and bringing my expertise there.
So what are you shooting with? What's like your typical like run and gun setup?
We've been using the Sony FS5 okay. for quite a while, and that's been a really good camera. It's relatively small. The FS7 is something a lot of people may be familiar with. That's a little bit of a bigger shoulder cam that we've used on bigger projects, but the FS5 is kind of our sweet spot. It does all the slow-mo features that we need. So I do a lot of like 120 frames per second during one day builds, or it can do time lapse no problem. But it's pretty small and mobile. It can go with us pretty much anywhere. I can break it down to fit into a small backpack, into overhead. We bring it on all the events. We use that in the Canon C100.
Yeah.
But the C100 is probably a little bit older now. The FS5 was where we really, that's like a workhorse camera.
Gotcha.
And then I have the GH5 I use for if I want to be more discreet. And when I do like places, I've shot some video in like, you know, Brazil, like Rio de Janeiro is where it's a place that's not known. It's a place that's known to be a little bit unsafe at times
when you have
gear like that. Yeah. So having a smaller camera, I use the GH5 for as like have in my pocket, and it shoots like fantastic 4K video. And then we use a lot of Blackmagic stuff. Blackmagic, it was a company that made converter boxes for our live to tape mixers, who have then gotten to the camera market. So we've been using their micro cinema cameras. I don't know if you saw, there was a Zoe Bell shoot we did, like a car shoot where she was learning how to drift.
Yeah.
And so we have this little Blackmagic camera that we're able to just kind of stick to the dashboard and have that be our dash cam.
Oh, that's cool.
And that's something that we took. Those are all things that we took from the Mythbusters guys, that they would use those Blackmagics for a lot of the crash cams and a lot of the cameras that need to be real close to explosions and stuff.
Yeah.
So we use pretty much everything.
That's cool.
But the Sony FS5 is like our main workhorse.
How do you do audio when it's in like an unknown environment or not sure where we're yeah. logging into?
So we have lavs. I really like the Sony lavs. There's like the Sennheiser wireless lavs and the Sony, and we pretty much just have each camera operator running two mic packs.
Okay.
And for the one day builds, I have one lav going to Adam, and I have that divided up into two channels. So I have a channel that's dedicated to volume control for his voice. And then I set the second channel to be much lower that picks up all the tools.
Okay, cool.
So that when I'm editing that, I have one track that's I can just label dialogue or something, then tools the bottoms, because that dynamic is
yes.
much, you know, you'll go to a bandsaw, all of a sudden everything's just clipping, but that second track, it's something a little bit lower so that I can like kind of switch back and forth. So I almost do like a multicam edit on audio almost immediately after I'm done doing the edit on video.
Okay.
We don't hire often for sound guys. We have used a couple in the past who can run boom and stuff, but we've had pretty good luck, especially with how small our footprint is. We've had pretty good luck on using the lavs and then like stopping and adjusting for it if we need to, or just like quieting something down.
Yeah.
So we kind of controlled that way as opposed to having someone dedicated to that.
Yeah, that makes sense. How do you guys keep... I mean, because I've tried using a lav a couple times doing work in my shop. How do you keep it like in place and not rustling? Like, is there anything you guys have found that helps with that?
Yeah, it's always just kind of finding the right collar.
Okay, it's just a battle. Okay.
Yeah, there is something that I've done in the past where if someone's really like if they're using a lot of jackets or something, I can either. I can't remember what the name is, but it's almost just like a little sticky pad, a little fuzzy sticky pad that is specifically for taping lavs to shirts.
Okay.
So what it is, you just take off the clip, take off the windscreen, and this sticky pad acts as the windscreen, and you just tape it to the inside of the shirt, and then that way it's pressing against the shirt and everything's kind of so pressed in together that it's not going to rub against anything else. So that helps a lot for that stuff. And then other than that, it's just, yeah, having to readjust when things
yeah
happen.
Yeah, yeah. So when you guys are doing the one day build, is it still kind of the FS5 setup? Is that what you guys, or what
yeah.
you're doing? And is it just a one, like, is it just you in there shooting?
Most of the time, yeah. It's either me or the producer, Gunther. We kind of tag team it. But we've tried multiple people. We've tried multiple cameras. And I'll bring in a couple of cameras. So I think the last one I did actually three cameras. But that was because I knew that the thing he was going to be building was going to be centralized at a table.
Okay.
And so I got to actually that's been like the last two builds. So it's been kind of fun because I've been able to build out rigs beforehand. So like an hour before we start, I'll know the area is going to be shooting. So I'll design like an overhead cam using like cool. C stands and some speed rail and stuff, and then have another camera dedicated like his workspace, and then one camera for him. And then having those three cameras there, I can kind of just like move around and control all those. When you start adding people into a shop, it starts becoming a little, like I said, it's a dance. So it becomes a little bit harder to move around and you start tripping over people. You start kind of getting in the way. And if it is a build where he's going to be moving a lot around, then I usually just do one camera. And I think I can do that now because I know how I'm going to cut it. And how it's going to end, the end product is that I can do a lot of zooms to replicate different cameras.
Okay.
So it makes editing a lot easier when like I know how to work the zoom exactly to the point where like I'm editing it in my head at that time. So I can go, okay, this is the tight shot. And then I can move around, do a wide, and then kind of just shoot scenes that way.
I'll include a link in the show notes, but I watched your, I think it was like a sped up of a one day build, an edit that you had. It might have been your channel or it might have been untested. Is it Premiere? Is that what you mostly use?
I use Premiere. Yeah. I used Final Cut 7 for years and moved over to Premiere, probably about 3 or 4 years ago now, but yeah, I use pretty much all Adobe stuff now, except for Color Grade and DaVinci. I've tried using Avid a few times and iMovie, or not iMovie, what's it? Final Cut X now. Yeah. I heard is pretty good, but Premiere is kind of the language that I learned in.
So
I'm able to basically just edit with a keyboard at this point.
Is there anything you found that you have to do differently because you're working in kind of these environments on the actual edit side of things?
Typically, for editing this stuff, I had to learn a good amount of deal about L cuts and J cuts. I don't know if you are familiar with those.
Yeah. But, oh yeah.
Yeah. Basically, just becoming kind of a master at those, and then also kind of wiring myself to be okay to move audio kind of out of sync with image. I use a lot of close ups in one day builds and stuff specifically so that I can grab dialogue from other moments and add them in there as if he's, you know, saying those things. And I'm not like completely manipulating the audience by any means, but like I'm kind of matching things a little bit better using audio out of sync with the video imagery. And other than that, it's just like really good media management. You come in with, I just finished an edit that was 7 days, and we had about 5 hours each day.
Jeez.
So it's like, and then cutting those down into 7 30-minute pieces. So like knowing exactly how to use your time code, how to use organization of like multiple cameras, and then using programs like Pluralize to sync footage, which is a godsend for syncing up, you know, four cameras and one audio track. And just kind of, just taking care to like take those steps early on to make the rest of your edit move a lot faster and easier.
Is it Synology? Is that what you guys are using for your backup and your storage and everything?
Yeah. So we do our backup solutions. We use Synology, which is like a server that I can access. So I'm in Los Angeles for like 70% of the time, and the rest of the guys are in San Francisco. And so we each have our own Synology server set up, which is basically like a RAID array of hard drives that is connected to the internet, but it also allows us to dump things into it locally. So typically, like when I come back from a shoot, I'll come back from a travel shoot, and I basically just dump everything onto the Synology. And the Synology has its own like, operating system so that I can bring it up and check on the health of all the drives and check on where the file structure and the file hierarchy is working. And then I can also create links, and like the guys up north can access my Synology through the internet, and I can access their Synology, so we can kind of trade project files and trade projects that way. And and see what, you know, see what each other are doing on the backup side of things. And then from there, once those drives start filling up, then we just dump them to local drives and then basically create two copies and keep one copy locally and then send one copy to our parent company so that we always have kind of two copies floating around.
Yeah, that's cool. So is it, are they fast enough on the upload that you can edit like footage that isn't, like say it's in San Francisco and you're in LA, like does it work that quick if you're
no.
talking like gigs of footage or you still have to have it local to start out?
Yeah, I haven't had much luck doing that.
Okay.
I can edit off of my Synology locally. Like my like the Synology is connected to the computer, is connected to the internet. And I have been able to edit, do edits here and there based off of a project file in the Synology. So, and it's actually something we have done in the past. When we used to work events, we would bring something like that with us and connect it to the internet. And then we'd have like five disk stations or five editing bays with people there. And all those people are editing off of the one centralized Synology.
Got it.
So that no one was overlapping. Everyone was always kind of working on different projects. And that worked. And that works okay. I still don't. I still try to keep everything local from when I'm editing. I think it definitely, it'd be really tough to do that remote, you know?
Yeah. 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 That's nuts. That's the amount of footage. I remember when I first started getting into video and it's like, hold up, like this is 64 gigs already gone. Like, where am I going to put this?
That's what the rest of the guys, they're using like AVC HD codecs, you know? And I came from a time where it was like DVC Pro, everything was DVC Pro and ProRes, where it's like huge file sizes. And these guys are complaining about like, oh, this 10-minute video is 2 gigs. I'm like, oh boy, like only if you were around back in the 2000s when our 10-minute video was 12, 13, 14 gigs.
Good Lord, that is so big. Like I said, a lot of the folks that are listening are probably trying to film their own stuff in their own shops. If you were going to like build your own kit for your own shop, maybe on limited funds, like what's like the best bang for your buck? Like what tips would you give to people on actual equipment?
I was just recently talking to Bill Duran about this because him and I bought the GH5s that are around the same time. I think we're actually both looking at cameras. I was looking for something. I knew I was moving. I was looking for something that I can, document my own stuff. And he was looking for a camera that he can use in his shop as like a one-man band. But I think going the route of like GH5, or I would even go to like a Sony A6500. Like these handheld cameras have gotten incredibly good, and they've also produced file sizes that aren't huge, so you don't need a whole lot of storage, and you can keep everything on just SD cards. So if someone was kind of looking to dabble into it for the first time, I'd recommend definitely going an A6500 or GH5, something handheld, and get an audio recorder, either like a Zoom H1 or the H2, one of the Zooms. There's also, we use like these little, I think they're Sennheisers, but they make these little standalone lavs, like these little blocks that have micro SD cards, and you can record to them locally. And then you just have to sync things up afterwards. But the price to get into this now, I think, is cheaper than ever to do like quality stuff. If you got like an A6500 and a nice lens, like your stuff would look, I mean, we've used the A6500 before and on build videos, and no one's said anything about the quality. So.
Right.
I mean, I think those things can be matched up with a Sony FS5 pretty well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then if you want to go a little bit bigger, then you can start looking at like I think the FS5 is probably like, again, my favorite camera, but you're getting a little bit bigger and you can't do as many like overhead rigs if you're trying to do something real kind of small. You just want your camera just hanging above your tiny mat as you're doing some wiring or something.
Yeah. What about on the lighting piece? Because I know a lot of folks are just like in their garages. They might have like one LED or fluorescent bulb like up top.
Yeah.
Like how much of a difference should that make, or does that make in any good recommendations?
I'm definitely a little more precious with lighting, I think, than the rest of the guys. We do a lot of, like anything we do in the field, we rarely ever bring lights.
Right.
But when we do in studio stuff, I usually like to fiddle with the lights quite a bit. And I've been fortunate to work with a few companies now. I think Aputure and Quasar each make like these LED lights. Aputure in particular, like they're they're actually, for what they are, they're really inexpensive. The 120D is a light that I've used quite a bit, and it's like the single source LED that can be changed out with different different like accessories to make it a different lighting style. But you can go with like quasar tubes, which is like quasar makes these, they're basically like fluorescent tubes, and they can fit into like a Kino style bank. I don't know if you know Kino flow is like a fluorescent lighting.
Right.
It used to be used in the film industry quite a bit. It's starting to, the traditional Kino tubes are starting to kind of phase out a bit, but a quasar, if you want something really like really small, but produces some real nice light at a high output, the aperture is going to be like, you can use that light for a bunch of different stuff. So if you got like a 120D, I can't remember what the price they run, but they're a few hundred now, but that light will be something that you can rig up to for anything really. Or just get a little LED light. I think just a little bit of a pop on a face or a product, I think really helps. And it's not something with cameras now. They're so sensitive. You can get away with not lighting things and still have a great looking image. But I think if you really want to just have that nice pop, just know how to use lights or just use the available light, use a window to kind of shape what you're showing. So again, like with cameras, you don't always have to light things, but I generally like to fiddle with them and really make things kind of pop out a bit.
Yeah. Do you have to think through your equipment differently since you're in environments like with dust or with grease? Like, do you have to approach that at all different?
Grease, not so much. Like dust and sparks, yeah. I have like a bag at the office that's for the FS5. I think we brought it to the Arctic with us. It was a bag to protect it from the elements. We usually use like, you know, UV filters on all our cameras, like just a cheap glass filter that goes in the front. Cause I think each of us have shattered one of those things, but it's basically, it's like a piece of glass that protects your lens there. And it's kind of like working with each environment. Like the Arctic, I use a lot of, I didn't want things, the things you want to avoid are things you don't really think about, which is like the going from ice cold to warm and kind of that shock on your camera. So just keeping the camera warm was as simple as like taping up hand warmers with these little bags that get hot, kind of taping those around the cameras, or just knowing your distance. Like we use zooms, we don't use primes. We use a good zoom so that we can stay away from things like sparks and grease.
Yeah.
Even though like, you know, some other lenses might look better. Like we can't afford it. A, we can't afford to get that close to the things that might damage this equipment, and B, also like just from a safety standpoint, it's always better to, you know, make sure everyone is safe by not having a person hanging out right next to someone who's welding something or grinding something away, like a table saw.
Yeah. Yeah. So as we're kind of wrapping up, we're getting closer to the end. Is there, looking back on the projects you have done for Tested, are there any moments that stand out or any projects that are particularly memorable?
Oh man, it's been a lot. We got to do a lot of really cool stuff. It's been I've been very fortunate to all of us have the kind of freedom to pursue the stuff that we want to cover, we want to build, and then being able to turn that into content for people. I think the most recent trip was probably tops everything, and it was when we went to to New Zealand and worked with the Weta guys there. And we've typically done a lot of behind the scenes special effects stuff, but this one was different because it was actually us building. So typically we go and we cover, if someone's building up some prosthetics or special effects for a movie that's happening, we'll go cover that process and how it's done. And this trip, we actually got to produce and make our own film based off of all of the techniques that we know and have learned and covered for so long, and then use that as an opportunity to cover those techniques. So
that's cool.
Yeah. Every bit of special effect that we were, deconstructing and figuring out how to do, we had some connection to it, cause it was our thing that we were making. So there was this marrying of creativity of following these people that create these awesome things, but also bringing our own creative approach and how we were going to execute this thing. And then having that be our content, which was like a really kind of magical thing to be a part of. That and like going to the Arctic, going to the Arctic with Chris Hadfield and a bunch of other YouTubers. And that was actually going back to like thinking about YouTube for the first time in a serious way. We were on a Russian icebreaker, a ship with 12 other people who who were predominantly YouTubers, and like seeing how they approached their day-to-day content gathering and how that differed from us was really eye-opening, and seeing how this younger, like not younger generation, but like a few years younger than us, but have learned and come up on YouTube, and seeing how they approached that stuff was kind of showed us what we needed to focus more on, or these things that we didn't even consider. So that was definitely a big pivot point in, I think, in our time at Tested, and figuring out this other generation that we were always kind of an arm's reach away from.
The Arctic stuff is nuts.
Yeah.
Was there any, I mean, what was it like? I mean, just shooting in an environment like that.
It was interesting. I brought a tripod. I don't usually use tripods when I do shoots like that, but I use it as an opportunity to try out things that I don't normally do. And it was probably a little bit risky of a trip for that, because it was a once in a lifetime trip. But here I was like, how can I make this different than what I normally do, but also challenge myself to like rewire my brain somewhat. So I came at it with this approach of like being much more methodical in my shots, like taking in certain moments. And then also I think, you know, Chris Hadfield, kind of, I was like chatting with him about it, and he was just basically like, yeah, you kind of have to, as I was trying to articulate this, he was pretty much like, you're going to have to kind of experience the moment, experience the place before you can really truthfully capture it. And that kind of stuck with me as being like, that makes sense. Like I need to think about why I'm capturing this stuff, or like how can I make this camera replicate both my eyes and my emotional response to this? And like having that be the kind of driving force in what I was doing, made it a much different shoot than what I was normally used to, and kind of much more like a personal shoot, to be frank. It was a life-changing event.
That's cool.
To say the least.
And that came out, that was in March of last year. Is that right?
Yeah. So we did 12, I think 12 videos for our premium subscribers. We have like a premium channel, or not a premium channel, but a premium player that has different video content than what would be on YouTube. And we did 12 kind of daily travelogues for that video. And then that piece kind of was what I made out of all of the footage that I took. So that was about 12 days. I took all of that footage and then created that through there. And that should be on our YouTube channel. But yeah, I think it was March of last year.
That's crazy. And I'll make sure to include a link in the show notes for everybody listening. But I appreciate your time and jumping on and chatting with me. Is there anything you guys have coming up that you're able to talk about, or anything that you're excited about working on finishing up 2018?
Yeah, keep an eye out for, like I said, keep an eye out for that Weta stuff. I think we'll be premiering a bunch of that at Comic-Con. If you guys are at Comic-Con, if anybody goes to that, we'll be doing some panels there. I think we'll be doing a panel specifically to talk about that Weta project. And then we'll be doing, of course, the Adam Incognito's Adam kind of walks the floor dressed up as stuff. So if you see any of us, you know, feel free to say hi and chat. And that's about it, yeah. After Comic-Con, it kind of slows down a little bit. We're going to take a big, deep breath and just chill out for a few minutes.
Well, cool. Well, if people want to check out your work specifically, any good places that you would send them?
Yeah, if you want to check out some of my personal stuff, or some of the stuff that's curated that I've worked on at Tested, you can see my website at just joeyfameli.com, joeyfameli. And then tested.com and tested.com, the YouTube channel, is where you can find the bulk of all of our Tested content.
Cool. Well, I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
It was a blast. Love what you guys are doing. So
thank you.
And I love the one day builds, just how you shoot it. It feels really personal. It's
awesome.
It's like you're in the moment with them. And I was like, this is neat. So
cool. It's good to hear.
All right, thanks for sticking around to the end. This is where I give you guys a quick update about the things that I have got going on. And this one is actually going to be really quick. In the next couple episodes, I will be actually on vacation. So through the beginning of July. So I am not going to be in my shop. I'm going to be hanging out way out in the Northwest. So I hope you guys are having a great summer and you're able to take some time off too. But I will be back with more updates from the shop here in a couple weeks. But you guys will still be getting these interview episodes coming out on a regular schedule. So hope you guys are doing amazing. And until next time, go make or break something in your shop. See you guys.